to the YONation.com podcast, the only podcast dedicated to University of Wyoming athletics.
This is the YONation podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I'm joined this week by the founder of YONation.com, Mr. Brad Reed.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Ready to get back to some podcasting after a few weeks off?
Yes, more than a few weeks. But anyway, we're very pleased to bring you tonight kind of a football season wrap-up. And to do so, we have brought in the hardest-working man in Wyoming sports media, Mr. Mike Varell.
Hey, guys. That's far too kind, but I appreciate that.
All right. All right. We'll give you a round of applause, too.
Wow, that's some amazing graphics you guys got going there.
Uh-huh.
No, this ain't graphics. This is in front of a live studio audience.
That's right. You have a lot of fans, Mike.
Oh. I wasn't aware of any of that, so this is just getting better and better by the minute.
Okay, well, there we go. So, no, you've seen it, I think, in your first year here covering Wyoming. Your reviews have been very positive. So we just wanted to show you some appreciation and let you know that the people of Wyoming really do appreciate your hard work and your coverage.
I appreciate that, guys. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me on.
Okay. All right. So let's just get into this here. We've had a couple weeks to kind of digest this season, and so my thoughts have become a little more clear. And so we'll just start. The Pokes started the season 3-1, then, you know, didn't close out the season very well, going 1-7 at the end. So what do you think was the difference between the first four games and the last eight games? What was the deciding factor?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, or I've talked about this a lot, and I think it's been, you know, worked over and over. But, you know, I'll say it again. It seems like, you know, they're 3-1, and they're in Honolulu at Hawaii. At halftime, they're up, you know, by double digits on Hawaii. And right before halftime, Darren White goes down, who was arguably the best player on their defense. And from there on, you had just a string of horrible injuries on that defense. And if there's one thing that we knew going into the season for Wyoming, it was that, you know, they had an opportunity to be a good team, whether it be a relatively good team that could certainly reach bowl contention, but they were not a deep team. And Craig Bohl knew that. And that's pretty much why Craig Bohl came in, was because with 5 years of Dave Christensen, they just did not add any depth to that roster. So they knew that they had to stay healthy to have a chance. They couldn't stay healthy defensively, and then you pretty much saw the wheels fall off. That shouldn't have come as a surprise to many people, I think. You know, when you have Mark Nzacha, who's the biggest NFL prospect on the defense, go down, Darren White, like we said, who was really the quarterback of the defense, the guy who was giving all the checks and the play calls, go down, a number of other guys, Sonny Pulitasi was out for the year the next week. It was just kind of an avalanche of injuries, and that certainly showed on the field. And what Craig Bohl said a lot was that, you know, you lose that many athletes who are experienced guys, it's going to bleed into special teams as well, and that certainly was apparent in the coverage units the last couple weeks as well. So, you know, we knew the offense was going to be a work in progress. They would have had to have leaned on their defense, but the defense just was not there for the final, you know, 6-7 games of the season, and that's why they ended the way that they did.
So, with the defensive struggles, you know, the offense, you know, we know that they have a ton of talent on offense due to Christensen's recruiting, and Brett Smith and Jason Thompson took their talents elsewhere, and that left Colby Kirkegaard in the driver's seat for the season. What was your thoughts on Kirkegaard's performance this year?
I mean, I think Colby was kind of, you know, he's kind of an unsung hero, and I wrote that in a column the last week of the year that, I mean, this guy deserves a lot of credit. He's not going to get a ton, and especially down the road, is something where I think 10 years from now, no one's going to remember Colby Kirkegaard, or very few will, but he was someone who came in, was the third-string quarterback last year, thought that his career was over, and then all of a sudden he got an opportunity, and he's definitely not the most talented guy, but he was a guy that every single person, you know, on that team respected, and because he was a leader, he's a smart guy, and he was willing to commit to this team when you really didn't know what was going to happen going into the season. So a lot of people before the year, you know, questioned Kirkegaard being the starter and said, why would he be the starter? You know, we haven't seen anything from him, and I think it became apparent. Not only was he the best person to run the offense, but he was, you know, he's a leader and he's just tough as nails as far as being hit and hit and hit as he was and continuing to get back up. Not to say that he was the best quarterback out there. He might not have been one of the the top half of the Mountain West, but he did the best with what he was given, and I don't think you could ask much more from a guy like that who's kind of thrust into an uncomfortable situation there. And he really made the best of it, and I think he showed a lot as far as his character goes. And, like I said, I don't think he's someone that people are going to remember down the line, but Craig Bowl is certainly going to remember him for someone who stood up and did the best he could in the kind of a transitional year.
And I think even with the problems that the offensive line has kind of had over the last, two, three, 4 years, I don't think I've seen a quarterback get hit that much and that hard as what Kierkegaard did this year.
Yeah, it was kind of a perfect storm situation because, first off, it was an offensive line where we went coming into the year, we all thought, is this line experienced enough? Is this line big enough? There was no one who was 300 pounds, or I believe there might be one person who's 300 pounds on that line, and you're asking them to run the power and have Colby Kierkegaard having some long drops there if they get in the third and long situations. So you have that as far as the line goes, and then you have Kierkegaard, who is just not a running quarterback. He's capable a little bit of scrambling, but we saw throughout the year that, he's going to stand in there and look for his guy, and sometimes to a fault, sometimes not. It showed a lot of toughness, but it also didn't work out a lot of times for that offense where you're standing in there and taking some pretty nasty hits.
And that's not to say that the offensive line was, really terrible this year. I mean, we had a terrific, second half of the season from Brian Hill, and before Sean Wick's injury, he was putting up some pretty big numbers and was a substantial part of the offense. So, as much as we like to bag on the offensive line, I think they showed us a lot this year just in the running game.
No, yeah. To clarify, that was a lot of the concern before the season, that they were too small, inexperienced, how would they adjust the offense. I thought they were a pleasant surprise throughout the season. Of course, pass protection was an issue, but a lot of that was getting in third and longs. You're going into a new system, and there's just some awkward things, and Kierkegaard is the kind of player he is as far as staying in the pocket. So, I mean, there were some issues there, certainly. But this was a line where in the preseason we thought, can they run power the way that they want to? And they pretty much ran on almost everyone they played this year effectively. You saw it with Brian Hill. You saw it with Sean Wick. The numbers are a little bit skewed because they include the negative yards from all the sacks with Kierkegaard, but, it should be a little bit higher as far as yards per carry. But, I think overall this line did an admirable job adapting. And Coach Bowl said when we talked to him last week, kind of the last, I guess, interview summing up the season, that he thinks that the offensive line could be a strength next year. And you think about having another year under Zach Duvall as far as the strength and conditioning. This is a group that will get, bigger and stronger, and they're a young group. You got Rafe Kiley in the center is coming back. Roulier, who was great this year and didn't get a lot of attention, but he was only a sophomore. He's coming back. And then actually something that ended up turning out being pretty good as far as you got a guy who was, and Ryan Cummings, freshman, kind of thrust into the left tackle role, which is extremely difficult. And, yeah, there were some growing pains as far as penalties go. But now, look, he's got a year under his belt, and he's coming back as only a sophomore. So I think you look at it's next season. There's some questions of the quarterback position. But this is a team that should be confident in the way that they can run the ball going into 2015.
Yeah, I thought Ryan Cummings was our best offensive lineman, and he did a heck of a job for being a true freshman to play there at left tackle. But Brad here mentions Brian Hill, and I just want to talk about him a little. His numbers that he put up, just in the last five games of the season are just astronomical. 796 rushing yards, that's 5.49 yards a carry, and 7 touchdowns. And he set that Mountain West record for most yards in a game, or all-purpose yards. So does the coaching staff think that he's a guy who can be a workhorse and that he's going to be able to improve to be like one of the best backs in the country?
I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that they're planning on riding him and having him be the focal point of this offense going forward. Certainly next year you're going to have Sean Wick, who's going to be in the mix too, but you look at, how much do they like Brian Hill? Well, they suggested that DJ May move to safety, and I think that says an awful lot, where they think, they look at the situation and they say, well, we've got this Brian Hill kid who came in and pretty much set the world on fire. You got Sean Wick, who's probably one of the best running backs in the Mountain West, coming back. They've got a couple commits already as far as running backs go coming in as well, who they like. So, I mean, he certainly was very impressive. It's going to be interesting to see how they split carries next year. But obviously, that's not a bad problem to have. And you look at Hill, you know, when he first committed to Wyoming, I was thinking, you know, would have liked to have seen him as a safety just because he's such a big physical kid and they had such a need there with Marquess and Huff leaving after last season. But, you know, who can complain with what he's done in running back? Certainly he's, you know, a 6'1", 204-pound kid who's got a ton of power, never goes out of bounds. He will drop tacklers who try to come at him with a weak tackle. And he also showed the ability to break away with speed, and he's kind of in that 4.4, 4.5 range, which will more than get it done. So I think he's a guy you look at and you say, this guy is going to be leading this offense for the next 3 years.
Uh-huh, and it brings up a point that, I mean, this guy was pretty lightly recruited, and Bull and his staff were able to identify him. So I think it should give Wyoming fans a lot of hope for the future that if they have, you know, a full time to recruit like they will this winter, and in future seasons, that they're going to be able to, you know, if they pull in one or two guys a year as good as Hill, we could build this team up pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting how that goes. And, you know, I'm sure we'll touch plenty on recruiting, but I really like how their current class is shaping up. But with Hill, you know, Craig Bull has been around long enough where he has ties with a lot of different people. And Brian Hill's cousin actually is currently playing for North Dakota State. So there's a little in there. I think Hill had been lightly recruited by North Dakota State before Craig Bull made the jump, but you had that little connection. Hill was a guy who got a lot better going into his senior year of high school, took on a big-time leadership role going into his senior year. Of course, you saw, you know, how athletic of a kid he is. He got some late offers from Northern Illinois, and I believe Purdue offered him also. I could be wrong about that, but he got some late interest that showed, you know, what kind of prospect he could be. But the fact that he chose Wyoming was really buying in and hearing good things about Craig Bull and what he could possibly do in that offense.
Yeah, and, you know, just watching Brian Hill run this year, he runs like a ton of bricks, and Sean Hill runs pretty much about the same way. So, you know, I don't know if we're going to have guys like DJ May that are going to be, you know, breaking away from defenders, but, man, these guys are going to punish pretty much anybody that they touch.
Yeah. No, it's gonna be fun to watch, and I think it makes so much sense what Brian Hill has said, and I did a story on this earlier this year, that Brian Hill always wanted to play defense. He grew up always wanting to be a defensive player, always wanting to hit people, and, you know, they asked him to play running back here, but I don't think he's really ever lost any of that, you know, mentality. You know, you seriously will never see him step out of bounds. He'll see the sideline and then turn up field just to get another shot in on somebody. And, you know, you have to like that anywhere, but especially in Wyoming, where it is such a blue-collar state, and they appreciate that kind of play so much that I think it's a nice fit.
What do you think the fit that DJ May is going to be on defense? Do you think he's going to be able to step up into that corner secondary position and be effective back there?
I really have no idea, because I like so many people, I haven't seen him play on that side. Certainly, you know, it goes into what Craig Bull has said, and he really isn't joking around when he says this, is that they want to get their best players on the field, period. You look at, you know, a combination of the kind of the stack that they have at running back, where you've got, you know, the players we just mentioned, plus so many other guys. When you talk about Tapscott and Omar Stover and Nico Evans redshirting and bringing in a couple guys that could be really good in this freshman class, you know, it's just hard to see how they're going to split that load. And then Craig Bull talked about the biggest weakness of this team right now being speed and athleticism on defense. Well, what does DJ May do for you? What is his calling card? Well, that's speed and athleticism. So I think the big question for him is going to be picking up, you know, the system, responsibilities, being able to play fluidly in the game. But if you're looking to find someone who can be an explosive, you know, player in the secondary to add right away, he certainly fits the bill athletically. It's just a matter of seeing if he, you know, if he can play on that side of the ball, because we have not seen it at all, and that's a big if. But from what Coach Bull has said, he's been very receptive to it, and he's excited about the move. So it's going to be one of several question marks and kind of storylines to look at going into the spring.
And going into the spring, you know, we're graduating what seems like our entire wide receiver core. We've got Rufran graduating. We got Trey Norman, Keenan Montgomery, and Jalen Claiborne all leaving. do you think that Poole's doing a pretty good job so far in recruiting, or what you've seen for Verbal's getting out there to replace those wide receiver corps?
Yeah, you know, I don't think they're losing everyone. As far as they've still got the pups hanging around, as far as, well, they're not so young anymore, but Tanner Gentry's coming back, Jake Malhart's coming back, both guys that have been used heavily. And I really was encouraged by what we saw from the tight ends as far as in pass catching, not explosive guys so much, but Jacob Hollister is a really athletic kid who was a high school quarterback and is extremely athletic, and you can tell, and he really came on the last couple of games, pretty much caught everything that was thrown at him. Same thing with Eric Nzacha, a guy who looks more like a wide receiver but is a tight end, and in the past there have been questions about his hands. You know, he had some drop issues in fall camp, which is why he didn't play quite as much. But he caught everything that was thrown at him, and he had some really impressive catches. Plus, you know, before the season, you know, going a little way back, but they were serious about playing Tyree Mayfield, who was a freshman last year, up until he got injured, and they decided to redshirt him. So, I mean, I think you'll be on just the wide receiver core, and they'll have some people there. But, you know, as far as the current recruits, I think they've got some interesting kids coming in. Of course, you got to be excited about C.J. Johnson, who is now, I think, the all-time receiving leader in Nebraska high school history. That doesn't happen on accident, you know, and he's a guy who's a big, tall, physical kid who can come in right away. Who knows, you know, what he can do for this team. Got a guy like Parker from Colorado who's coming in, who is pretty much the opposite as far as being a speed guy, more of a slot guy who maybe you think can fill a Claiborne-type role. You know, you don't know how these guys are going to do right away, but I like what they've done so far as the receiving core and recruiting. You know, all these things aren't sure things. It's hard to speculate on if they can make an immediate impact with this team, but I think Bull has shown, you know, through this year that if a guy is ready to play and if he can help them, then he'll play. So there's a chance we'll see a couple of those guys right away next season.
Now with Cluster Johnson, is it junior, right? Is that his name?
Yep, C.J. Johnson. Uh-huh. And then Cluster, yep.
Yep. So what is your sense of his level of commitment? I know, obviously, Nebraska just made a coaching change. He was pretty much ignored by the Pelini staff, but with Mike Riley taking over at Nebraska and his dad being, you know, he was a pretty good wide receiver in the Nebraska National Championship years, how strong do you think Johnson's commit is at this point?
It seems pretty firm to me. I haven't spoken with him in a while, but, you know, when he committed, he was very firm on it, and his dad, who I spoke with, was very excited about him going to Nebraska and had a strong relationship with Craig Bohl. Obviously, that has not changed whatsoever. Nebraska did not heavily recruit him. He has not had a Nebraska offer. If that changes, that will certainly be interesting to look at, and, you know, you could see something maybe happening. But throughout the last several months, you know, CJ was one of the first kids to verbally commit to Wyoming. And in the last several months, you know, you've seen him tweet things out where he's wearing Wyoming gear and tweeting about Wyoming. He hasn't really shied away from that. So, you know, I think it feels like it's fairly strong right now. Certainly he's had a ton of attention in the state of Nebraska and has had another huge year. So maybe he'll get some other looks. But, you know, right now with the ties, you know, his dad has to Bull and the way that he seems to feel about the program, I feel pretty good about him sticking around.
All right. Well, that's good to hear.
So the Cowboys have picked up a couple of verbals from Casper Natrona guys. Do you think Bull's going to make a more conscious effort to recruit within the state of Wyoming to get some, you know, young Cowboy fans excited to, you know, maybe have an opportunity down the road to play for the Pokes? Or is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think. Yeah, I think he's not going to force it. Where if someone's not there, you know, I don't think he's going to force it. And there are years, you know, where there won't be a Division I kid maybe coming out of Wyoming. But in a year like this, I feel like Bull has shown that if a kid is a borderline Division I kid, if he's athletically capable and they feel like they can develop him, because they claim that the strength of their program is developmental, then I think they're going to take a shot on these kids. And Bull came in with a history and a reputation in North Dakota of visiting every single high school in the state, looking for diamonds in the rough and being able to kind of flesh out these kids and grow them. And, you know, I personally like what we've seen this year. You know, having spent a little bit of time with Natrona as they prepared for the state title game, I've seen Logan Wilson and Harshman practice and practice and play, and they're both athletic kids. They're going to, you know, probably have to get a little bit bigger. I think Wilson's going to be a safety, and they're probably going to have Harshman try to grow into being an outside linebacker. But they're kids who are a little bit more developmental, and I think, you know, you probably won't see them right away. It'll be a couple years down the line. But in this kind of state, you know, if Bull really is the kind of guy who can develop that kind of talent, then why not take a chance on a kid who's, you know, from the state, who's buying into the program and representing the state well? I think it, you know, it sends a good message, and it also could pay dividends in the long run for him.
Yeah, it'll get, you know, a lot of fans excited about, you know, seeing their homegrown talent, you know, stick around the state to play football.
There's no doubt about that. And there's also, you know, they're waiting on this other kid you guys might have heard of, this Tevis Bartlett kid. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that last. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm just, you know, joking about, you know, obviously he's pretty highly publicized, but, you know, I think his commitment is going to be coming sometime soon, so we'll see which way he lands.
Have you talked to him lately and gotten any kind of impression of where he might be leaning? Or?
It's hard to get an impression as far as leaning, because he's an extremely smart kid, and he's taking everything in. He has said, you know, during his official visit that he isn't going to judge one of them until he goes on all of them, just so he can kind of compare and contrast. But now that he's done with the recruiting process as far as visits, he took his last visit to Washington this past weekend. I don't think it's going to be much longer now. I think it's going to be a matter of talking with his parents, discussing everything, and making a commitment. But from what I've heard from everyone, Wyoming is still very much in the mix. You know, I don't know if you call them a favorite. I have no idea as far as where he's leaning right now. But, you know, they're in the mix as far as several other schools, and he's gotten some big-time offers. But I don't think we'll have to wait all that much longer to see where he goes.
Yeah, as a Cheyenne East grad myself, and mind you, when I was at school, they're absolutely terrible in football. I think in my years there, I think we won a total of 3 games. So the fact that we have a quarterback, you know, who is being recruited, you know, by BCS schools just blows my mind.
And was a Gatorade player of the year.
Yeah, he wasn't the Gatorade player of the year this year. That went to Christian Meyer, who Wyoming has not offered from Bighorn. But, you know, Tevis is a heck of an athlete, really physical kid. You know, he had been being recruited by Wyoming as a quarterback. I don't know if that's changed at all. I can't see him playing quarterback at Wyoming. I think he would, you know, either be an outside linebacker or a safety. And if that was the case, he could play very quickly with just how athletic and how physical he is. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, if he were to come to Wyoming, how they would kind of settle that, where he would end up landing. But, you know, there's no doubt when you see him play and we see him on tape, you know, just kind of the raw athleticism that he brings to the table. And it's something where, given the right coaching, they could develop him fairly quickly into a player.
And Bull's reputation on defense is pretty good. He's got a lot of players in the NFL playing defense, so I think if he wants to do it, I think he would probably play pretty early, like you said, and probably have a nice impact on the team.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting, because, I mean, Wyoming certainly has its pull. You know, it's a question of, you know, there are so many big-time programs that are going to show elite facilities and say, you can play for us in the Pac-12 conference. You know, you can be one of the top teams in the country right away. You can be on national television, all these things, flashy uniforms. We're talking about, you know, Oregon, Washington, he just visited, you know, the Big Ten, Iowa has offered. You know, Wyoming is not going to be able to compare with all of that in that regard, but their you know, pitch is going to be significantly different. It's going to be about, you know, do you want to be remembered in your home state as someone who bought in when they could have gone elsewhere, and as someone who wanted to represent Wyoming and, you know, raise the platform to a higher level. And it's something that takes a lot of guts, you know, to do. And if you made that decision, people wouldn't, you know, wouldn't quickly forget it. So Wyoming can't, you know, pitch or can't tout a lot of the things that a lot of their competitors can in that regard, but they definitely have their unique kind of, you know, sales pitch to Tevis. And, you know, I wouldn't say that Wyoming is a favorite by any means, but I think they're definitely still in the running for his services, and it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, those are great points. So that'll be a situation to monitor here as we get closer to signing day. I know we talked about this a little, but I just want to backtrack to these position changes. We mentioned that May will be moving to safety, and Bull has said that he has a couple other moves in mind, but he won't announce them yet because he hasn't, you know, cleared it with the kids. But do you have any ideas on, you know, who maybe might be a spare part on the offense that might switch to the other side of the ball?
You know, I really don't. It's something where he has not given any kind of specifics, so it's kind of hard to tell. When you're looking at, you know, positions that are stacked up, it's kind of hard to see many that have a lot of depth offensively besides the running back position, where obviously there's a lot of guys and not all that many carries to go around. But it is hard to say, but I would be able to wager a guess that, you know, most, if not all of those moves, and I don't think there's going to be a ton of them, maybe a couple, but most of those moves would be from the offensive side to the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, you had a reverse situation this past year where Jordan Ellis came in as defensive end and ended up switching over very quickly, making a move to fullback, and he ended up playing somewhat behind Drew Van Manen. So, you know, Bull has shown the willingness to do that on both sides of the ball, but I would expect guys to go from offense to defense in this case. I don't really know who it's going to be. That's another thing we have to look at in the spring, is there hasn't really been any kind of tipped hand at all, but maybe on the one of those running backs, it's kind of hard to tell.
Mm-hmm. And one more recruiting question from me. Now, you mentioned the fullbacks, and in this offense, that's a huge position of importance. But, and, you know, in modern college football, even, you know, teams who use the fullback, they don't often like to give fullback scholarships. So do you know, is the staff currently looking for a fullback to give a scholarship to?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I mean, if you guys have seen our recruiting tracker, I mean, there are a lot of offers out there. I can't recall there being a fullback offer out there. But I know that, you know, I've been told in the past by, you know, all the North Dakota State folks that will be a, you know, an emphasis, is that they'll try to bring in a really physical kid. I know that they were, you know, impressed with what they saw from Drew Van Manen, and obviously he's not the biggest kid to play that position, but I would expect them to address somewhat in recruiting. I don't think it's their first priority. Their first priority is still on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, I haven't seen anything as far as a scholarship offer to a fullback that I can remember. But it'll be interesting to see if anything comes. I think if anything were to come like that, it probably would come late in the process. So it'll be interesting to see if anything comes in the next month or two.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, as the season kind of went on for us, you know, the Cowboys they took a couple of pretty good thumpings there at the end of the year. A couple of them on national TV, which was not a whole lot of fun. What was the attitude in the locker room that you were getting from the players? Were they still pretty upbeat and, you know, into the system 100%, or, you know, were the heads starting to hang there towards the end?
I don't think there was any lack of buy-in from this team, and you saw them going into games and it seemed like it was an optimistic group. I don't think, you know, it was ever a problem as far as them, you know, losing faith in Bull or the coaching staff or anything like that. You certainly didn't get any kind of sense. It is tough, of course, you know, when you are losing games the way that they were, and they're just, you know, so depleted, you know, towards the end of that season, where it was kind of hard to compete in a lot of those games when they're going against really physical offenses and explosive offenses, you know, i.e. Boise State. But I don't think attitude was a major issue. You know, we asked Bull last week if anyone was planning on leaving the team that he knew, and he didn't have any names at that point. I wouldn't expect a ton of defections in that case. I think there's still been a lot of buy-in, regardless of the results. You know, they can kind of see what is trying to be built here, and a lot of that doesn't happen in a season. In very few cases, you can make that large of a turnaround systematically in a year. So, and it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure a couple guys will go. It happens every season, and it won't be any, you know, cause for major alarm, most likely, unless it is a Jason Thompson, Brett Smith type scenario. But I don't feel like there's any, you know, give or let up in this team as far as belief in the coaching staff.
Yeah, and that's really good to hear, because, you know, those last two or three games, it was just, you know, bad. Lack of a better
term. Yeah, I feel like that's fairly succinct. I think bad is a fine word to use, and I don't think many people within the team would argue with you on that. You know, Utah State certainly is a deceptive game, considering that they you know, outgained them in pretty much every offensive category, but just couldn't put the ball in the end zone or through the uprights, honestly. They gained a lot of yards and couldn't score for whatever reason. But other than that, it was, you know, pretty ugly. New Mexico obviously could have gone either way, but by that point, you know, it was too little too late for that team regardless. So, you know, I think they're turning the page, though, as quickly as they can. It's going to be important for them to get a lot bigger and stronger in this winter and really key in on this recruiting class.
Do you think the aggressive schedule this year had, you know, anything to do with that? They started off with FCS Montana, who just advanced or just finished their season in the second round of the playoffs, then in the FCS playoffs, then, you know, Oregon and Michigan State on top of that, you know, plus the grind of the Mountain West. You know, we're not the SEC, but you know how it is. Do you think an aggressive schedule this year maybe hurt them a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. You know, it's tough. I don't think they were, you know, a lot of people just were just saying, you know, just stay healthy. And I don't think that was a major issue where they didn't really start losing guys until Hawaii. But it's, you know, it's tough. The last year under Christensen, I came in and said, well, this is a schedule that is set up for Wyoming to win 8 games. And that's why it was so disappointing when they finished 5-7, because it was really out there for them to take. This year, that was not the case. And I wrote in my column before the season, kind of your prediction column type deal, that 6 games was the ceiling for this team. And that was, you know, if they play great, they can win 6 games. And they won 4 games. So, I mean, that's pretty on the money with as far as, you know, the kind of people that they lost throughout the year. It just was not set up for them to have a ton of success when you look at, you know, those non-conference games are brutal, doesn't, you know, help you instill a lot of confidence in your team, and then a lot of, you know, road games and a stretch there where you're playing a lot of good teams in a row towards the end of the year. Before, you know, you looked at the Boise State, Fresno State, Utah State stretch and you say, wow, you know, it's kind of hard to catch a break at that point. And then you factor in that, you know, the Mountain Division was just so much better than the West this year. There's just a lot of things kind of coming together. It wasn't really set up for them to have a ton of success in their first year. But if you look ahead to 2015, you know, there's certainly a lot more opportunity, I would say, next season.
Yeah, the schedule, you know, two of the out-of-conference, Washington State and Appalachian State, those seem like pretty good opportunities for the Cowboys to win a couple on the road.
Yeah, no doubt. And, I mean, Washington State lost to Nevada last year, so they haven't had the best recent streak against Mountain West teams. They can certainly be had, didn't go to a bowl game, anything like that. So it's a Pac-12 team, and that's a big moniker, you know, when you hear Pac-12. But it's far, far from a powerhouse. It's not your Oregon. It's not your Michigan State. So I think Wyoming is going to come into next season with another year under their belt, you know, under this coaching staff, and hopefully a lot of confidence, ready to make, you know, as big of a statement as you can make against Washington State, which is a, you know, it's not that, you know, loud of a statement, but you do what you can with your schedule.
So is Hawaii pretty much your favorite road trip now?
Wait, what was that? Sorry?
I was going to say, so is Hawaii pretty much your favorite Mountain West road trip now?
You know, it was quite an experience for me, just because I had never been to Hawaii, so it was a whirlwind, and coming to Wyoming from Chicago and never having lived out here, pretty much every trip that I take is the first time I've been someplace. So that's why, I mean, one of many reasons why I love the job. But Hawaii, I don't think, is really meant to be absorbed in a 36-hour time frame where you're flying out in a 5-6-hour flight, and then you're there for 36 hours and you're covering a football game and then getting on the flight and, you know, going 5 or 6 hours back. But I fit in as much as I possibly could in that time frame, as far as, you know, hitting the beach and then hitting, you know, Pearl Harbor on the morning of the game. I went to Pearl Harbor and did that whole thing, which is right next to their stadium. So kind of try to just jam-pack as much as you can into a small time, couple of days there, I guess.
Well, hopefully next year Wyoming could get bowl eligible and they'll go to the Hawaii Bowl and then they'll get a week out there.
Yeah, no, I've been wondering I've been really thinking hard about the last couple of weeks if I'm cursed, because I've been covering teams for 3 years now and have yet to go to a bowl game. I've had 2 5-7 seasons and a 4-8 season. And the 1 year that I covered Mizzou football was their first year in the SEC, and I think they've gone to bowl games in, you know, since 2005 or 2006, they've gone every year except for the year that I covered them. So, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, you go in with a lot of optimism with some of these teams, and things have just not gone well as far as the injury front in a lot of cases. And, of course, 2013, Wyoming, some things went wrong. But, you know, I can't complain too much. It's just one of these years it's bound to happen. So
well, basically what you're telling us is not only do you bring us lightning delays, but you also bring us lack of bowl games.
No, I mean, the lightning delays are for sure on me, because we had one at Mizzou when I covered them, and then I just brought them here, apparently. I think they said that there had not been one for like 30 years or something before I came. So, you know, I've been inviting the blame for that. That's, you know, it's kind of hard to refute the fact that I'm, you know, responsible, and I take full blame for that.
Yeah, the encore at the Montana game, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that was it was such a tough game to begin with. So much defense and very little in the terms of explosive plays, and then to have to wait it out there, it was you know, kind of put a little bit of a damper on the season opener of a new era. But you know, you do what you can, I guess.
I'm not gonna lie, it was way better sitting next to you guys up there than being out in the lightning and rain.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing that I've always, you know, taken full appreciation of, is every time that there's one of those delays, or, you know, you've got bad weather in Wyoming, as typically as will happen in late fall, I'm always, you know, perfectly comfortable. So I'm not going to complain about that anytime soon.
All right, well, thanks for your thoughts on football. And I guess while we have you here, if we could get just a couple quick questions about the basketball team, since we have you here. Now, did you take the trip to SMU, or were you able to watch that game?
No, yeah, I was in Dallas for that.
Okay, and so I just thought, now the Cowboys lost that in, you know, tough fashion, you know, kind of just melting down the stretch, but I thought the atmosphere there, and it being our first road game, it's a really good test to get us ready for Mountain West Conference play.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see if that was, you know, it's kind of hard to judge that game having only had one road game about what we really saw there, because it was a SMU, you know, make no mistake, they're only 4-2 right now, but there was a lot of talk about the NCAA tournament with them before the year, and they're certainly going to be major contenders in the American this year. So they're for real, and they had a nice turnout, a nice atmosphere there, and Wyoming was up 6 with about, you know, 10 minutes to go, and then things kind of fell apart, which, you know, that will happen, and everything kind of went wrong in the last 10 minutes. You know, their guard Moore was hitting jump shots off screens all night at an incredible, you know, percentage, and they couldn't really find an answer for that. But, you know, I think that was a game that was a winnable game for Wyoming, and you can take positives out of it. You can certainly take negatives out of it, but we'll see how they rebound against Cal on Wednesday, because I think they're certainly capable of winning these games, but you just got to see if they can finish down the stretch.
And Cal should be a nice test for them. I saw they took Montana to double overtime the other night, so it looks like that they should be beatable at home. And that'll be a nice win, you know, over a nice Pac-12 school, so that'll help for the RPI at some point down the road.
Yeah, well, don't jump to any conclusions, because that Montana game was probably one of their worst games of the year, and they've been very good. They're 7-1. They beat Texas earlier this season. Their only loss, gotten that screwed up as far as them losing to Texas or beating Texas. It's on the tip of my tongue right now, but their only loss is a legitimate loss, I'll say, and they've beaten some dangerous teams, and they've got four scorers in double figures coming into this game, so they can attack you in a number of ways. So it's definitely going to be a big time challenge for Wyoming going on the road again, and it'll be interesting to see if, you know, if Nance can come back and have a good game and sort of carry his share, if the bench can do their part, because they, you know, were kind of silent against SMU, and of course Shai didn't use them quite as much, but they weren't effective in their time. So there's going to be a lot of questions answered in that game before we head into the conference season.
So what's your thoughts on Larry Nance coming back from basically blowing his entire knee up, and now he's moving around the court pretty well, and his team is on a roll right now?
I think he's fine. You know, the people who said, you know, that he should have taken this entire year off and redshirted, I think is ridiculous, because you know, you have to understand that in Shiat's, you know, in Shiat's program, that decision is ultimately going to be up to the player and his family. And Larry just would never have done that, having the opportunity to play and come back and help his team and all those seniors they were so close with. He's capable of playing physically. He was going to be out there. So that was never really an option, as long as he was healthy and good to go and cleared, which he was. Now, you know, he's had a couple mediocre games as far as scoring in a row, and he certainly seemed hesitant against SMU. But Shiat said the other day after the Regis game that, you know, Larry still doesn't quite think that Larry is back yet as far as having everything going full speed, which I think is probably true. But Larry Nance Jr. at 80% or whatever percentage he's at now is still a heck of a player and someone who's going to help you. And not just with scoring, you know, even if he's just out there, isn't scoring a ton or isn't taking a lot of shots, he's still an extremely smart player who knows how to play defensively and to move his teammates around. And he's the leader of this team without a doubt right now as far as psychologically backing everybody up, supporting his teammates. He's just a huge personality right now on this team, and they need him not just for production on the court, which they probably will need him down the stretch, and I expect him to get better and better as he continues to come back, but just to have that presence there is huge for this team. So I think so far so good. You know, he's not, you know, throwing up 40-point games, but he's healthy, and that's what really counts right now. It's still early in the season, and you would expect him to get better and better as he goes along.
And basically 80% Larry Nance is better than pretty much everybody on the court.
Yeah, no, I mean, he gets it done in so many ways where you haven't seen the points at times this year. You'll see, you know, have games. He only had 4 points against SMU, and that was not a good game for him. But for the most part, he'll have 10, 12, 14, 16 points. But you also see the rebounds and, you know, those other statistics, 2 or 3 block shots. He'll have a couple steals. His hands have been very active this season, if you guys have noticed. He's a fantastic passer, and teams have been respecting him so much that they've been double-teaming him consistently, and he's great at dishing out to shooters. You know, he gets it done in a lot of different ways for this team, in some ways that are probably not quite as appreciated as the scoring.
Yeah, and the national commentators at the SMU game were pointing that out. They're like, well, you know, he's not scoring, but, I mean, he's a star player who's a team player, and that's something that you don't see very often.
Yeah, that's the thing with him is, you know, he's not going to get 30 every night or 25 or 20 every night, and that's because he's not a selfless player. He does not force shots, period. You know, you will not see him do that unless he's putting up a final shot of a game. If he's getting doubled, he'll pass out to the open three-point shooter. He knows the game too well. It's just not in his DNA to force things and try to take over a game offensively if it's not there for him. So that's the way he's going to continue to be. You just got to hope that, you know, the guys around him, given the open looks, can flourish around him and they can kind of continue to bond together and do things on offense with more than just one guy, because they're going to need, you know, Adams and Agrebo to be good, and your bench players, they're going to need Herndon and McManaman and all those guys to contribute to be able to go where they really want to go, which is the NCAA tournament.
That's right. Well, we'll monitor that as we get closer to conference play, and hopefully the Cowboys can, you know, they're showing a little more depth, and hopefully they can keep that depth productive throughout conference play so Wyoming can finish where we'd all like them to finish.
Yeah, no, I think the big thing with this team is, you know, you got to stay healthy, of course, and that's something that we've seen in the past is there are some guys that they can probably afford to lose and keep going, and there are other guys that are just crucial. You know, I think Nance and Adams are two guys that, you know, they have to continue to play well, and they've got to be out there for this team. So they need everything to keep going smoothly, and if they are healthy, it's a very tight team. It's a very selfless team, and I would expect them to get better and better and to continue to have a lot of confidence as the season goes on.
Well, all right, Mike, Brad and I thank you for joining us tonight, and thanks for all your insight.
All right, guys, yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Mike.